Well, welcome to Week to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California for Monday, April 10th, 2017. I don't know if any of you saw this. A critic of the president tweeted, quote, "Glad our arrogant president is enjoying his taxpayer-funded Gulf outing after announcing the U.S. should take military action against Syria," unquote. Oh, wait, and this is true. That was actually a tweet that conservative commentator Sean Hannity wrote in 2013 about President Obama. So don't you love how the internet just saves everything?
Yeah.
Well, I'm John Zipper. I'm your host for Week to Week. I'm also the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. Very glad to see you all here. Very glad our panel's with us. Now, on today's program, we're going to discuss the president's Syria policy, plus some of the drama that's in the White House these days, as well as California Governor Jerry Brown's $52 billion transportation bill, Fox News' continuing sexual harassment issues, and maybe some other things if we don't just spend the entire hour talking about Trump. Well, of course, end the evening with our live news quiz. As always, I note that the Commonwealth Club is a place for people with a wide range of views, so any opinions expressed are those only of the speakers and not necessarily of the Commonwealth Club. Now, let's meet our panel. I'm going to start on the far end there with Bob Butler. He's a reporter with KCBS Radio. He's the executive director of Butler Media, and he's on Twitter at BobButler7. Let's give him a call. Next to him is Joe Garofoli, the senior political writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. You can find him on Twitter at Joe Garofoli. So thank you, Joe. And next to me is Barbara Marshman, the editorial pages editor for the Mercury News, and you can find her at Barb Marshman. So thank you. There are question cards throughout the room. I think you all know our drill here. Write out some questions. They'll be delivered to me, and I'll try to ask as many as I can during our hour here today. Let's dive right into it.
Before we start.
Sure, Bob.
Barb, just want to pull a surprise.
Yes.
My organization did. East Bay Times, which we are partners with East Bay Times for the ghost ship coverage.
If I remember the December ghost ship stuff, great reporting.
Thank you. They'll be pleased to know they got a round of applause.
Yeah, it also destroys one of my news quiz questions, so.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, listen, President Donald Trump last week upended quite a bit of things when he ordered an airstrike against a Syrian air base that had been used to deliver chemical weapons to, I forget what city it was. Was it Mosul?
No, Rikers. Okay.
Someplace. Joe, how did this action play with his base and some of his other supporters? I mean, it was very controversial, even perhaps more controversial among some of them than it was in general, wasn't it?
Yeah, and surprisingly, a lot of Democrats liked it. I mean, you had Feinstein coming out, and it was very measured. That wasn't even quite praise, but it was like this was the right thing to do in a proportionate, to use the White House's terms, response. That was echoed a lot. But he turned around on 72 hours by the time they started giving him the options and stuff what to do.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't answer the question, what is the U.S. Syria policy? We still don't have one. And as someone said, an airstrike is not a policy. And we did right after it, talked to people who used to be in the State Department and Department of Defense and Leon Panetta. And they're like, the concern is that, because he gets so much praise, it's been 75 days and not a lot of wide praise for the president. But if he got a lot of love for this, for the bombing,
yeah.
He might, the concern was that he might, do it again, do another quick, proportionate strike on something. And that's the concern there. But the bottom line is, the big picture is, we still don't have a Syria policy.
No, you have the UN ambassador saying, need regime change. You have Tillerson saying, no, it's still up to the people. Hard to vote when you're gassed. But Trump, it just it just came out of the blue. And I, you know, there was something for me that felt right about doing something, but then I felt Obama should do something when the first gassing took place.
So it was kind of nice to see it happen, and I wasn't really surprised, because the thing about our president is that it doesn't matter how things affect the United States, it's how they affect him.
Donald Trump.
And he went up and said, you know, I've changed my mind. This has really affected me. And so I wasn't surprised to see us go and throw a bunch of cruise missiles. The irony is you do this to send a message, and then the next day they're launching planes from the same airport. So what kind of effect did it really have?
No, this is symbolic, totally symbolic. Yeah. And you have to combine military strength with diplomacy. And diplomacy is hard work. I mean, that's like a lot of... And we still... Panetta, it's like, who are the good guys there? We don't know.
There's hardly any staffing in the State Department.
Yeah. I mean,
they still haven't even staffed up.
There's been some talk lately, and by lately, I mean very recently lately, about his foreign policy and defense... top brass, if you will, many of them literally were until very recently, meaning there are a lot of generals and lieutenant generals there, but that they are asserting themselves on policy, and he's letting them either guide him or take the lead on some of these issues. We have an aircraft carrier strike force heading toward the North Korean coast. That'll make you feel more secure. And, there are reports today, I don't know if it was new today or I just happened to see it today, about Russia funding or at least sending weapons to the Taliban in northern Afghanistan, not to help us. So, but what do you think about that issue of what are we learning about his decision-making by the fact that, at least on defense, it does seem he's relying on these people, and where could that lead?
Well, that's not a bad thing. To rely on your generals when it comes to military policy. I mean, this is what they've done for years and years and years. In fact, I find it interesting that, you know, within the National Security Council, you know, you have the NSC, you know, Flynn gets canned for whatever reason. McMaster comes in, wants to bring his own people in. They're basically to tell him no. He wants to get rid of this one guy. This guy sticks around and becomes the guy that gives the information to Nunez, the alleged wiretapping. All of a sudden now, McMaster is, people are being kicked out, and he's bringing his own people in. I think he's gotten to the point where he said, look, you know, I'm not going to do this if I can't bring my own people in. The last guy said, well, I can't bring my own people in? Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. Tillerson certainly has had this issue somewhat at the State Department, not being able to appoint his own round of deputies. And, of course, they flushed out a lot of the Obama senior folks. It is, of course, natural to replace them, but to have gotten rid of them without your own people coming in to take those spots, I mean, maybe people have criticized Secretary of State Rex Tillerson for kind of being AWOL, you know, on a lot of these big decisions and a lot of the public pronouncements about U.S. policy. But might he not just be hobbled by the fact that it's a bit dysfunctional at the State Department right now?
You know, that could be, but he really seems to be press shy. And he does not seem to believe, there are a few things he said, and I won't remember specifically, that indicated he didn't feel he needed to talk to the press, or the public, to do his job. He sees it, I guess, more as behind the scenes. But it's very disconcerting as a member of the public, let alone the press, to have no idea what's going on there. I mean, we hear more from Nikki Haley than we hear from Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, and she's as Joe alluded to, some of Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, her comments have been in contrast, or at least...
Yeah.
More aggressive, if you will, I think, toward Russia than Rex Tillerson was.
Much more.
And this almost turns my previous question on its head. Are these two not in sync, or which one of them is in line with what President Trump is thinking, or are they all kind of going freelance?
Well, and they definitely don't have the rhythm of what's going on yet, whether it be domestic stuff or foreign stuff. Look at the way the health care plan rolled out. He kind of said, okay, Tom Price, you do that, and Ryan, you do that. And there was no ownership by the president of it. Mm-hmm. He brought in people for the photo ops to try and woo them over, but there wasn't the leadership. And this is the guy who was supposed to be the deal maker. And then he was supposed to close. You know, he was supposed to be the big closer, and he wasn't able to close the deal. It's just, nothing's working yet. I just read this book we were talking about before we came on called The Gatekeepers, it's about chiefs of staff, the last chiefs of 17 chiefs, or the 17 living chiefs of staff were interviewed for it. And you need a strong chief of staff, and we don't have one yet. Mm-hmm. Priebus is not, he's the guy who should be, he shouldn't have let the executive order on the travel ban go out. He messed up on health care. He messed up, we don't know what the Syria policy is before we start bombing people. I don't know. It's a lot of chaos on the domestic side and on the foreign policy side.
We should get in a bit of a plug here. You're going to be moderating a program.
I was setting up for that plug. Yes. Yes. We don't have to peek behind the curtain here. Yeah. We could have done that subtly.
And when is that date?
It's April 27th.
April 27th, the Radio at the Commonwealth
Excellent,
Club.
Excellent book. I commend it highly.
But, you know, I think part of the a big part of the problem for the people, aside from the generals, mm-hmm. Who know how to deal in a public setting, you know, you have to get buy-in from your deputies in order for things to work. And here you have a president who basically it's my way or the highway. Secretary of State, who basically has been the chair of what Chevron, Exxon, he had a staff to do all this stuff. Yeah. So you don't have to basically get buy-in. I say it, it happens, and that's all she wrote. Yeah. Government's a lot different. You have to get – one of the things I talked with some people about, if Trump does win, he talks a good game, but you have to have Congress to buy in because they have the money. Okay, the House Ways and Means controls the budget. And if you don't get these guys on your side, things aren't going to happen. I give you the Health Care Act.
And plus, he's never, even as he's has spent his entire life in a private company, he's never really dealt with a hostile board of directors. He's basically run, and it's his family business. I mean, he's never had opposition to deal with, and you can't fire Congress or
The
Supreme Court, for that matter. He can campaign against them.
He seems to be threatening the Freedom Caucus. Yeah. I don't think the attack told us anything about his policy. I think we saw a Donald Trump reaction, and it could mean a change in policy. It could just mean, a one-off. He was upset by the pictures, but he's not upset by the kids who were starving and the nations where we will no longer let refugees in. I mean, there are a lot of children dying in horrible circumstances, not moved by those. Some are saying at least he, by doing something, he's reasserting that America does have a role in sort of policing the morality of the world. But, then there's always the possibility that the president of China was there and he wanted to show him that he wouldn't mind lobbing a few missiles if... And North Korea, something went wrong.
You can't say enough of how much our president is about optics and how things look.
Yeah.
The one thing that's kind of gotten lost the last 10 days or so is this Russia investigation.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are those who I was reading a story about the day after the airstrike, we had all of these Putin surrogates going on television and talking to the press, and they're all saying the same thing, paraphrasing. See, he's not beholden to Putin.
Right.
He's he's his own man. See, but you almost ask yourself, was this really a setup? Because it did get it off the front page for a while.
It did.
Just like, the tweet about, the irony about the tweet about the wiretapping.
Yeah. Obama.
Had he not done that, a lot of this other Russia stuff wouldn't even be a story.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're all familiar with the so-called alt-right, this very hard nationalist, in some cases very racist wing, that has been a strong supporter of the Trump presidency and during the campaign as well, a lot of them, a lot of them had a falling out with Trump over the Syria thing. And it actually goes right to what you're saying about the whole idea of, yes, you know, we have a role to play in improving the world, but there's a worldview that they were really hoping for, which was that the United States would stop trying to do that. And they seem to be reflecting some of this concern by folks who also aren't in the alt-right. I say concern, in some people it's a hope, that Donald Trump is becoming a more normal president, if you will, at least as far as bombing things in the Middle East.
The seventh consecutive president to bomb the Middle East.
Right, right? Yes.
So congrats on that. Going back to what we're sort of alluding to there, Obama, you know, was criticized for, you know, the doing the diplomacy but not the force.
Yeah.
But his full explanation of that was to really go in there and make a difference on the ground, you would need a massive ground operation, which nobody wants. Congress didn't want it. The polling says the American people don't want it. So, you know, these things are like you said, they're kind of, I mean, it's hard, it's really stupid to call it cosmetic because people are dying and things are being destroyed, but it's really super, it's not moving the, it's only good for pictures on American television. That's about it.
And Obama's criticized for drawing that red line and then not doing anything about it. But, you know, he did go to Congress and say, listen, what y'all want to do? Yep. And Congress said no. You know, they were true to form. Anything he wanted to do, they said no.
But I took that also as him calling their bluff.
Right.
You know, people are quick to talk tough. And so by him going to Syria, I don't think he wanted to go into Syria. So it was both calling their bluff and, okay, I know they're not going to go for this. But, you know, what, you want a war? Vote for it. Put your name on this. And they said no. Now, if Trump had gone to Congress and asked them, I honestly don't know what would have happened. We have yet to see him really exert influence on the Congress to get something done. You mentioned the health care rollout.
Kind of, sort of. It's kind of a half-assed way of doing it. Yeah.
But that's the irony, is that, you know, Obama was criticized for not being a strong leader and just bombing the heck out of Syria and anybody else that we feel needs to be bombed. he went to Congress because he wanted to get buy-in from the Congress, as you are supposed to.
Right.
And he was criticized for that. Trump goes and just says, hey, I don't like, I'm offended by this. I'm going to bomb the hell out of you. And he does that. And now he's being hailed as a hero, you know, by the same people that are criticizing Obama.
Actually, you guys are really scaring me, thinking that we might be encouraging him. It hadn't really occurred to me before.
Encouraging Trump?
Encouraging him to bomb more because we liked it, or because people liked
it. I don't think people liked it. I mean, I do think the fact that he made a decision, it was decisive. Mm-hmm. I think it was for the wrong reasons, because he was offended, not the country was offended, but he was decisive and he did that.
And that's why his base loves him, because they feel still that 35% of people who are still with him, and the 80% of Republicans, 85% of Republicans, because he's, even it looks like he's doing something, and you know, I'm doing something. Whenever I say something, it's definitive, you know.
But even that tepid support from for the action from a number of Democrats still comes down to he was responding to the use of chemical weapons,
right?
Yeah.
And well, let's go on to something that I think will make Barbara less scared, and that is
thank you.
Justice Neil Gorsuch was confirmed, and today he took his oath.
Oh no,
as an
I'm much more
Justice
scared
of the
by
US
Neil
Supreme
Gorsuch.
Court. He, of course, assumes Merrick Garland's off chair. I mean, Bob, this was always going to happen, right? With a balance of power in the Senate, it was really kind of a foregone conclusion. What do you think about the, I don't want to call it theatrics, but the drama of, you know, the nuclear option, getting rid of the filibuster for these votes, and, you know, kind of how each party played this? Any thoughts?
Well, I felt, and this is just me, and I don't know how things work, I guess, I felt like the filibuster was kind of dumb, that it would have been better just to go ahead, all right, let's take a vote and just vote no. And you wouldn't have gotten any Democratic votes, and I thought that would have been the way to go. Mm-hmm. You could have saved the filibuster. In hearing other people talk about it, you know, there was a reason that they had to really go strong against his seat. You know, the fact that this is considered a stolen seat, I'm not going to label it that, but I understand why they say that, and I do believe that Garland should have at least gotten a hearing. The fact he didn't get a hearing, I think, is really abominable. But it goes to show you how our politics have gotten in Washington and probably other states also. But the Republicans, they knew they had the votes, and you know, it was the height of hypocrisy to say, "How dare you, you know, not give this man a hearing, you know, not talk with him, and not vote for him." When, you know, months ago you were saying, I'm not going to give you a vote. I'm not going to give you a hearing. I'm not going to give you a Supreme Court justice because we want to let the American people decide. Well, the American people actually decided for Hillary Clinton because she got more votes than Trump. Yeah. But they don't. They seem to always forget that.
Well, I think it was, you know, in terms of like why they went through the whole rigmarole of pushing the filibuster and everything.
Yeah.
They're playing to their base. This is the response to the resistance and people wanting them to just do something. So, you know, we know you don't have the votes, but just pretend like you're, you know, going to push back hard and stop being such institutionalists and et cetera, et cetera. So they kind of had to do that. They knew they weren't going to win, but you know, it was political theater at its finest.
Well, the point of
which means worst.
The point of the filibuster is once you launch it, you need 60 votes to get cloture and call a vote. So it requires 60 votes if you persist with the filibuster. I'm not a big fan of two-thirds votes for taxes or any of those things. I think the majority should rule. But if there's anything I would say it's not a bad thing to have 60% for, it's a guy who's appointed for life. You
know? Who's 49.
Pardon?
Who's 49.
At 49, yes. He's going to be there a long, long time. And most of, I think, Obama's people needed a 60% vote. I think they had to overcome a filibuster. I don't think it's it's just one more progression in this terrible division between the parties. So now if you're not going to use a filibuster for that and the Democrats take over in 4 years or 8 years, three years. Time flies. You know, then they can do it.
You can do they actually filibuster Obama's Supreme Court nominees? I don't think they did.
They may not have, but they got 60%. They got 60 votes.
The lower courts. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was looking at a story. Obama filibustered more judicial nominees for Obama than had been done for every president past combined. Obama was like 82. That they filibustered or refused to seat or just rejected. Mm-hmm. And every president in the past for the lower courts, 80. 80.
Yeah.
We're talking back to George Washington. Okay? So that's pretty significant.
And this really hurts the day-to-day operation of the courts. I mean, there are people, justice is not served when you don't have enough judges to hear the cases. It's a real problem.
And Joe, to your point, someone in the audience writes about the Democratic opposition was also fueled by the whole Merrick Garland issue. This was a seat that the Republicans refused to even consider. It was a foregone conclusion that, of course, Gorsuch was going to win because the Republicans both then and now hold the balance of power in the Senate. But it's also a foregone conclusion that fight was going to be refought here.
Yeah.
You know, they're, like you said, the Democrats kind of had to show that they
had a pulse.
Yeah. I'm going to merge a couple questions from the audience because it actually gets right into the next topic I wanted to talk about, and that is the balance of power, if you will, in the White House, and in particular, Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law. as wait, don't tell me, he calls him the guy who stole Trump's girlfriend. It's such a creepy undertone to that. It's really creepy. Email Peter Sagal at waitwait.org.
Yeah.
Way
to pin that on wait, don't tell me,
yeah.
too. They said it.
That's right.
NPR, defund NPR,
the
right there. That's the reason. And I want to put this into connection with another person in the White House who's powerful but seems to be losing it, and that is Steve Bannon. So people on the left and many on the right have been fearing that Steve Bannon, the president's chief strategist, is that what he's called, had too much power. But Bannon was taken down a peg last week when he lost his role in the National Security Council. Comedian Stephen Colbert wrote, quote, Steve Bannon was removed from the National Security Council. No word on when he'll step down from his role as president, unquote. But it does seem that actually the one who has the power there besides Donald Trump is Jared Kushner. And this is, I think, a partial list. He's been tasked with solving the Israeli-Palestinian problem, heading the new White House Office of American Innovation, solving the opioid crisis, reforming the criminal justice system, revamping Veterans Affairs, being a shadow diplomat with foreign leaders, and apparently keeping Steve Bannon in place. So let's talk a bit about Jared Kushner. Is that...
It sounds like he's vice president.
Sorry?
It sounds like he's vice president.
It does. I mean, yeah, usually you task them with a whole bunch of stuff, run NASA, take care of this.
You can't fire the dude. It's your son-in-law. You can't fire
him.
He could screw up all those jobs and be like, well, it's my son-in-law. I got to get him a job. You know, it's like my daughter's working in the White House, too.
The thing about this, and this is what just flies in the face of everything that we're used to in this country. You don't hire your family to work in the White House, to be in your cabinet.
Yeah.
And Trump is breaking all these rules, and there's nobody sitting back saying, wait a minute, you can't do that. There's nobody he'll listen to except for his daughter, who's not going to say, fire my husband.
Right.
So it's really scary when you think about the amount of power that they have.
Yeah.
And it's also, you get incensed when you think about his sons, every time they go on a business trip, we're providing their security. You know, we're providing their travel and entertainment.
Yeah.
And then the only person that benefits from this is the president.
The business.
It's really, really shady. But I don't know what you're going to do about it because the Republican Congress, I don't see them saying anything about it.
Yeah. Is that something that, I mean, will be litigated through lawsuits, or does it have to be government accountability?
Well, but if you file a lawsuit, who has to go to court for him? Who has to sue him?
Who has standing?
Oh, it would have to, right. Someone who wouldn't have, who themselves like a, can.
It'd
any
be
taxpayer?
It would be the Justice Department.
That's right.
Okay, Jeff, I need you to sue the President of the United States.
And but to be fair, I mean, we had two Kennedys, and Robert Kennedy was the Attorney General and sort of de facto Chief of Staff, and Hillary Clinton was in charge of the health care thing. So it has happened before, but not like as the – this is like a couple of – and having that many jobs, too. I mean, the guys
– And no experience
in his defense,
in
he is 36.
So. He is what?
He is 36, so, you know. He's got
no.
Bobby Kennedy had real stature to be to be Attorney General, and Hillary Clinton had done a lot of policy work in Arkansas. So there was and you were prepared for that. They talked about that during the campaign.
Right.
But aside from Bobby, Hillary was not a member of the cabinet.
No, she was not. She just
in
took
fact,
on a project.
After Bobby, it's when they actually put this rule in that you can't hire your family to be in the cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, now I don't know if it's actually in law anywhere, but for past practice, that's the way it's been. Mm-hmm. And now what's going to happen going forward?
Right. And this guy's his experience has been he's a real estate developer. He inherited the company from his dad. So, it's like – and who's in jail? Yes. Well, there's that. You're right. There's no experience. And so a guy with no experience doing any of those jobs.
But clearly the president trusts him with things that he's not entrusting to anyone else. And really, these are things that could go south pretty terribly. So, I mean, he's trusting almost the future of his presidency to a very untried hand. But again, he trusts him. He must trust him.
But yeah. Even if things go south,
yeah,
what's going to happen? It'll be like the health care law. Well, I'm moving to something else. You know, I mean, that's the thing about our president now is that if he doesn't like something, you know, he'll just move on.
Yeah.
And you can say it failed, like the health care law failed, but as far as he's concerned, it didn't fail. It's those people over there, they didn't get it right. You know, and the irony is, you know, I never said I was going to get it done in the first 65 days. No, you didn't. You said on day one.
Yeah. So you're 64 days late.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
Someone in the audience asks, couldn't the ACLU sue the president? Do they need to have... they would sue on behalf of someone.
On behalf of a taxpayer stuff. Yeah. Because doesn't that affect all of us? I'm no lawyer.
It's still hard to. That's a difficult thing to do. I mean, you've got all of these security charges. You've got Mar-a-Lago. He has spent, you know, gazillion times what Obama spent a year already going back and forth to Mar-a-Lago,
and it's only been 180 days.
Yeah.
And the, you know. His wife is in New York, and the son is in New York, and there's a lot of security costs with that, too. You know, that's...
A theme with a number of these questions you folks are putting it up here, there's a word that keeps showing up. It's called impeached. Impeachment. Can he be impeached? You're probably getting a little bit ahead of things, but it does kind of bring to mind the people who suggested, tongue-in-cheek, that... President Trump's Supreme Court nominee should not be considered for confirmation during the final year of his presidency.
Very nice. Very nice. Well done. Well, Adam Schiff, the head of the Intelligence Committee, who's a former federal prosecutor. He actually came before our editorial board about 10 days ago or so. And, you know, we asked him, has he done anything to be impeached? And he said, not yet. And so he is, but, you know, and he, this is the guy who is seeing, you know, obviously all the intelligence, the one that, the stuff that Nunes lets him see. and he said it has not risen to that level yet.
Is Adam Schiff, do you mind if
please,
I ask a question?
Please, Barbara.
I knew nothing about Adam Schiff until all this started, and all of a sudden I'm president of his fan club. I mean, he's just very low-key, very intelligent. Everything is very ordered. You know him? You've known him for longer?
No, I haven't. I was fairly ignorant of him myself, and then I did a little profile of him because everybody's like, who the hell's Adam Schiff?
Yeah.
And when he was in the state legislature, I talked to Don Perato, who was the head of the Senate for a while, from the East Bay here, and he told me he's the same way. He's always he's meticulously prepared. Mm-hmm. That explanation when he was at the Intelligence Committee, the one open hearing they had where he sort of laid out the case in 15 minutes was great. I was like, wow, now I understand it.
Yeah,
The people kept saying the same thing. He is sort of uncharismatic. His charisma lies in being having no charisma.
Straight.
Yes.
Well, it's refreshing.
It is. And he's from Hollywood. He represents. He lives in Burbank, which is really kind of strange. Yeah.
And it's ironic that he now is seen as the future of the party. He's one of those people.
He's one of.
We also have our congressman from the East Bay, whose name is escaping me.
Eric Swalwell,
yeah. Who, you know, is like all these people that nobody knows about, but they're on the Intelligence Committee, and when you listen to them talk, it's like there's some there. Yeah. And then who's it, Castro, that said he'd be very surprised if someone doesn't go to jail, followed by the Republican congressman who said, I'd be surprised if nobody goes to jail. You know, in other words, this guy is saying someone's going to go to jail over all this stuff if they ever get to it. So I don't know. I mean, that's the thing that right now they're on recess. And if you believe what these people are saying, and the Intelligence Committee has seen enough to know that there are some people that are in serious trouble for the things that they said. Now, the thing that we're all talking about was their collusion between the campaign and the WikiLeaks and all the emails. You know, the more you hear these guys talk, and they can't say everything, you have to believe that they've got somebody on tape saying, listen, you know, why don't you release this batch next week? Or release this batch now so we can get this, you know, Access Hollywood tape off of the front page. If that happened, someone is going to go to jail. We don't know.
Yeah. Very good. Well, let's move on something closer to home, and that is the California road bill. Some of you will actually be traveling over roads on your way home. So California Governor Jerry Brown got his wish. He convinced the state legislature to pass what I'm sure Joe Biden would agree is a very big deal. It's a $52 billion transportation infrastructure bill. Critics have been complaining about the horse trading and such that went on behind the scenes, but the bill passed. Barbara, why did the governor want this bill?
Oh, I think he has always realized that our, you know, our roads, everything's a mess. Our bridges are crumbling. I mean, nobody really questions whether we need to spend a lot more money on
infrastructure. So wait, you're saying roads are bad even outside of San Francisco?
I have been outside of San Francisco.
Okay. I've heard that it exists. I've just never been there.
Roads that are bad outside of San Francisco. I don't think he's going to fix any roads in San Francisco. Maybe Oakland. But so he's known for years, and Jim Bell, our state senator down in San Jose, has been pushing this really hard for years, wanted to get it through last year. Jerry said, no, can't do it. You know, we'll do it next year. And you know, there are those who say if we hadn't borrowed from the gas tax fund, you'd have had the money to do it. Actually, most of that money has been paid back to the fund, and the rest of it would be paid back by this tax. That said, there was a lot of horse trading that went on at the last minute. And I have a hard time saying it's terrible, they shouldn't have done it, because we keep saying we want people to come. This is how you build compromise. This is how you get the votes to get things done. Congress can't do that anymore because everyone is so principled. That said, it was pretty ugly. What do you think?
Well, it was pretty ugly, and a couple of those things. But they're good. I mean, they got it passed at one level. But some of those things, like the $400 million for the ACE train extension, which is, you know, still prospective at this point. And once you have a lot of money sitting out there, they still have to get federal money. And how long is that going to take with this administration, this Congress? And you know, it's a lot of that stuff was. So those folks who can go back home and say, hey, I voted this way to raise your taxes, but look, we're going to have $400 million for the ACE train that'll be here in 2020.
Well, this is an indefinite tax.
Yes.
This does not sunset.
So you're talking about the 12 cents a gallon tax, that, the gas tax.
And the car fees, the fees to get the electric cars and so on, paying for the roads they use. But all of that is not only indefinite, but will rise with inflation.
Oh, it's indexed to inflation.
It's indexed.
It's indexed, yeah.
As I recall, less if you had indexed the tax that was passed 23 years ago, it would today be higher than this tax will be if you had indexed it. So just for what it's worth.
And the governor was some masterful politics here where, you know, he says, okay, we got to vote on this in 1 week.
That's
quickly,
right.
1 week. There's no reason to vote for it for 1 week except that they're all going on vacation.
Exactly.
And then they would go home, and then the opposition would mount, and they would, you know, might hear, they go to a town hall, and people are like, what the hell? I'm not going to raise my gas taxes. You know, don't do that. And so they wanted to get it done quickly. Yeah. And he's in his last year and a half left before he's termed out, and he it's yeah, legacy
and,
building.
And the race for governor is already starting, yeah. So it'll be more politicized.
Right, and he doesn't, exactly. So he had to do it now, and he doesn't care if people think, oh, I'm not going to vote for Jerry Brown again. Well, they can. Unless he runs for president.
Yeah,
you talk
know.
About the horse trading. I was listening to the radio the other day, and I don't know who this this state senator is or state assemblyman is. I guess state senator down in the Central Valley. A Republican that voted.
Oh, Canelo.
Yeah.
Anthony Canelo.
Boy, he has a target on his back right now. Yeah. So next time he's up for re-election, the big guns will come out.
And he's already in a rickety district, too. Like, I think it's a Democratic-leaning district. So he's like a more of a moderate
The Democrats might vote for him.
they might get some Democrat votes on this, yeah.
So will this – I mean, $52 billion sounds like a lot, but is this enough to take care of the state's problem?
No, it's about of the total need, I don't think it's even half, is it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember the number that they said. Like,
I mean, it's
$52
billion over 10 years. That's okay. The figure.
But so the total wish list is something as X above that.
It's definitely not making all of the bridges safe and doing everything we'd like to do to the roads and doing complete streets everywhere, which they're trying to do now, which I think is a good thing. Complete streets. You don't know. You ask, what are complete streets?
Hey, Barbara, what are complete streets?
I can tell you. Complete streets are, you have your street. You also have bike lanes. You have pedestrian. You have sidewalks. You allow for all kinds of transportation on that street. So it's not just, a lot of our expressways in the South Bay are just paved roads, and people walk along them on the crumbled macadam at the side. So now when we redo expressways, we put in sidewalks, and we're adding bike lanes.
I learned something. I'm a better
just
person.
when you fix something. You're not redoing, obviously, not redoing everything. But so this is, I believe, the state, there is at least an element of complete streets. We in the bond that we passed, tax that we passed last fall in Santa Clara County, complete streets was part of it.
Okay. Well, let's head back to the national scene for for Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General. Last week we learned that he was having the Justice Department review agreements between the federal government and local police department. Consent decrees, is that what they're called?
Right.
Okay. So USA Today says that Sessions ordered a review of all police reform agreements and investigations initiated by the Justice Department, part of an effort to cut back on federal oversight of local law enforcement. So, Bob, want to take a first crack at this? I mean, what's going on?
Well, I don't know if you remember, several years ago in Oakland, they had a group of officers known as the Riders, who would ride down on people and plant drugs on them and beat them and false arrests and all that, and they got busted, and the police department was put under a consent decree. It's been almost like 20 years. And there are, I forget how many years, I think something like, maybe it was 2002, so it's been like 15 years.
Yeah.
But they're still under it. Even though they've had, this is now their, fifth chief in the last year or two? I mean, these things are necessary when you have a department that is out of control. And you find that when you have situations like we had in Ferguson, where you have a department, and it's not just Ferguson, all around St. Louis. If you drive around St. Louis, you will find yourself getting speeding tickets left and right. Yep. And they do that because you'll drive down this one freeway and you'll pass through four different jurisdictions, and they each have their own laws. One will be 35 miles an hour, one will be 25 miles an hour, one will be 50. And not always posted. So you find out, once you get the tickets, that it's a real problem. When you start talking about, hurting people, beating people, and killing people, it's ironic to me that you have all of these police officers who have been accused of killing people, and they're never there's never a problem. Yeah. They didn't do anything wrong. They feared for their life. When you have a bunch of that going on, someone needs to step in and oversee it, and it needs to be the federal government. Somebody has to be there. Yeah. So the fact that they want to get rid of these consent decrees, or at least review them, I think is a chilling, it's chilling for people of color, especially because they're the ones who are affected by this the most. The city of Baltimore, which has these reviews underway after the Freddie Gray case, after the riots there, they basically said, no, we're not going to do, we're going to keep this consent decree. You know, heck with that. We're not
so they can keep it. It's not something that automatically is lifted if the Justice Department decides not to.
No, well, they're just reviewing them.
Okay. At this point, right. I mean, I suppose they could change some policy and say, mm-hmm. we're not going to do this anymore. But it would be really bad. Really bad, I think.
Besides recusing himself from the Russia investigations, Joe, this is Jeff Sessions' first big debut in his job as Attorney General.
And this goes to the Trump law and order mandate that he ran on. I'm all about law and order, echoes of Nixon, mm-hmm. and this is siding with the police. This is again something that he said he was going to do, and this is kind of the first baby step towards doing that. But this totally resonates with the base.
I had a discussion a few weeks ago with a couple of they were both former San Jose police officers. One's now chief in Sunnyvale, and one's in Watsonville. And they were talking about how training in the San Jose Police Department has changed. Mm-hmm. The recruits used to train them to control people. When you get out on the street, here's how you have to control people. And he said you go downtown and there's homeless people and you kind of practice on, kind of getting them to do what you want them to do. So that when the officer is out on the street, he'll know how to get control. Now they take them downtown and teach them how to listen and engage in transactional discussions. If someone seems to be a problem or seems to be having a problem, discussing things with them. And it is all about diffusing a situation rather than... Now, we're really lucky, I think, that we have Eddie Garcia is police chief and a philosophy. We've got our, bad apples, of course. But I think that's the direction that we thought things were moving in the country. Mm-hmm. And that could reverse in a lot of places if you start removing the threat of a consent decree.
Those skills are very important to be able to diffuse a situation. You also have to have those skills in learning how to control.
You do.
You have to be able to, when somebody comes at you, you have to be able to take them down. I don't, and I know the policing is a very difficult job, but I have problems, especially with how some people are treated, and I have problems with some of the shootings that take place. The one that took place here in San Francisco that I just still can't understand is the Mario Woods case.
Yeah.
A guy that has accused of cutting somebody with a knife. He has a knife on him, apparently. I didn't see it was showing, but he's got five officers around him. Yeah. And they kill the guy. And come on. You mean someone couldn't take out a bayonet? I mean, a bayonet.
A musket?
Take out a baton, and smack the guy with the baton if he had a knife in his hand. I mean, why can't five police officers take down one guy without killing him? That's the thing that gets me.
Well, then you have the push and pull between they don't want to use stun guns in the city. Whereas that, how many could that? So many people with that.
They don't have tasers.
They don't have tasers
because the police commission is saying no.
They don't want it. Yeah.
And I think it's a mistake because this case like that, that's one person that didn't have to die.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move along. Just to poll you in the audience, how many of you would apply for a job at Fox News if it came open? For those of you listening on the radio and the podcast, one hand. We had one hand go up. Okay.
Was it a man or a woman?
I don't want to put them on the spot. But so Fox News, which is still smarting from the messy divorce with former chief Roger Ailes over his widespread sexual harassment career, it's now facing renewed attention to the way women are treated at that media company. Its top personality, Bill O'Reilly, has reportedly been the cause of $13 million as has been paid out to women alleging he harassed them. What do you make of this? I mean, it's I mean, the words we've all said a million times, culture of...
Is anyone surprised?
Well, and the thing is, here's the other thing. It's like, I mean, what is it, 40 advertisers have left at this point?
The Bill O'Reilly program.
O'Reilly's program. They go elsewhere on Fox.
They go out, yeah. They're still... and his ratings have gone up.
Yeah.
His ratings have gone up. Now, if the ratings, if the advertisers... I'm curious to see how many come back.
Yeah.
That'll see how... It's a gut check for the advertisers. Oh, my God, we're leaving. But, the good audience. Well, maybe we should go back. You know, it's not that bad, really. So I'm waiting to see what the advertisers are going to do because that's... You know, if you're going to take a stand and hold it.
Yeah.
Bob?
Draw your attention back to... I think it was 2004. The Rutgers women's basketball team was in the NCAA, and this disc jockey, said some derogatory
Imus.
Things.
Yep.
Don Imus. Yep.
Right, and it wasn't that he said the stuff. It was just the whole. It was him and his sidekick, and it was just very, very. It was very racist and very derogatory. And then what happened at that time, the chief diversity officer for GE, which owned NBC, he was on MSNBC, Paula Madison. She got together with her people and said, you know what? We can't do this. The head of American Express said, you know what? We can't do this. General Motors said, you know, we can't do this because... Had he worked for their company, he would have faced termination for what he said and what he did. So that's what's happening with O'Reilly. A lot of these companies, they have these policies where if somebody did this that worked for them, they'd be out the door. So people are now saying, well, how can you advertise on this guy's show when it's clear that he's been doing this? And he says that he didn't do anything wrong. Our president says he did nothing wrong. Big surprise. But
after his thorough investigation,
exactly. I heard things. I think some of them might come back, but it's going to be a really tough road for them when you have somebody who's this misogynistic and this inappropriate.
I hear you, but I am such a cynic on these things. I think that Imus's ratings stunk. O'Reilly's are good. O'Reilly is his ratings are almost double what his competitors are. He makes $18 million a year, and then plus the $13 million they pay for the settlements. Fox is out a lot, but he makes a ton of money for that thing. And I know it's what you're saying is it's the right thing to do, but I'm just really cynical about these things, and I hate that I am.
Well, it could be like the Bill Cosby. One person says something 10 years later, they're just a gold digger. When two people say it, well, they must have been friends. When three people say it, man, what's going on here? When 10 people say it, it's like, whoa.
And the last woman, I'm spacing her name right now, she doesn't want money. At this point, she's saying, I'm not suing. And that's an element of purity to this. You can't dismiss her as a gold digger or whatever.
Today there was a story that three other Fox News employees are accusing the channel of, quote, appalling discrimination, unquote, and years-long relentless racial animus.
There's not a lot of people in color on Fox.
No.
Juan Williams and that.
But there are people behind the scenes.
That's true.
Yeah.
And in my former life, when I was president of the National Association of Black Journalists, I talked to a lot of people, and I talked to folks who worked there, and it was a very tough place to work because of the way they treated Obama and because of the way they treated black people, period. Not as far as treated them as employees, but just the overall editorial direction when you had to, you would impugn anything that the president would say, and any black person, you had to question their motives. So I know it was a tough place to work for a person of color. And if you're a woman, imagine that. So I'm not at all surprised, and it's not just happening at Fox. I talk to people at other places who, behind the scenes, the stuff that you don't see, it's really tough. And there are a number of people, one of the networks that left, you know, and basically have filed a class action lawsuit against the network, basically saying they were denied promotions, they were passed over for promotions over and over again, not given good shifts to work, you know, always working on the weekends, and that's something that's I think it's already been filed.
Let's get through some more questions.
Something more pleasant.
Yes. Before we get to the news quiz, someone asks, do you see the president's use of Twitter as a threat to the mainstream media? I say to three members of the mainstream media. What is your forecast for the mainstream media 10 years from now? So a very small question, easy to answer.
I don't see it as a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please.
I don't see it as a threat to the mainstream media. I think Twitter is just another platform, another for communication, and I think he uses it very effectively. I mean, you know, he uses it very effectively. I mean, in terms of getting a message out, I mean, the message might be crazy sometimes, but in terms of getting a message out, he's effective at that.
Yeah, I don't see it as a threat. I mean, I think we spend a lot of time covering what he says on Twitter because he doesn't talk to reporters very often. I think it's a stature problem, a trust problem for many people. You know, you really don't want your president tweeting weird things. But his fan base loves it. And so as far as, you know, what is becoming of the media, the mainstream media, I don't know. Kids don't read newspapers is all I will say.
But they do read Twitter.
Pardon?
They do read Twitter. And Snapchat.
And they also read news on their phone.
Snapchat, but, Facebook, yep. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't, 10 years from now, do I think KCBS will still be in business? I would hope so. As long as you're driving in your car, and you have to get traffic reports.
Yeah.
How many people listen to traffic on KCBS? Okay. And how many of you, you know, go on your phone to get traffic reports when you're driving? Uh-huh. Police rough. Yeah. I'm looking for you. No, I mean...
That was the young people in the room,
busted,
I believe.
Trick question.
I do believe that we'll still be around. But Twitter, you know, all this social media, these are just delivery platforms. You still need content. And I think that's the problem that we're in now. Yeah. There's so much content out there that it's really hard to know what is true and what is not. Because there are people out there, and we saw this during the election, who you know, deliberately put out false information in order to confuse people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this whole thing about this Russia election thing was about people putting out false information about Clinton, positive information about Trump. The idea was just to confuse the hell out of people. And people were confused. You know, do I believe that people would have voted the way they did had it not been for all of the stuff? Maybe, but you really don't know. But as far as, like you said, if it wasn't for the president's tweets, cable news would be in trouble. Because they spend,
right.
I mean, every hour there's four or five people on there talking about what the president just said.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
And Congress would be in trouble. I mean, they have their investigations or things that he's tweeted about. The other thing, isn't it fascinating that Twitter doesn't make money? Twitter is a highly troubled company.
Yep.
Even with the tax breaks.
Very
another
nice.
Question.
Yes. It's a good San Francisco joke there.
Yes. That was people outside of San Francisco listening
like,
to this.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Trump does not really know, this is a question from the audience, Trump does not really know how to run a country. He seems to depend for advice upon his daughter and son-in-law, as we talked about a bit earlier, and the cabinet are all very rich, wealthy persons. It seems to me that he should be impeached. For just the mere fact that he pursues his private financial interest and has families on his official advisors. They're not a fan of Trump's, but I think that's going to be a theme we're going to see come up again and again, along with the Russia thing, because the Russia thing, they might have knocked it off the front pages for a bit, but, you know, there are investigations going on. And
Congress is recessed right now, too.
Yeah.
It'll be done.
And there's media digging into this, you know. So do you agree that the financial conflict of interest stuff will also be kind of long-lasted?
Well, there is the Emoluments Clause, which says you're not supposed to benefit from your from the office of the presidency, mm-hmm. Which he clearly is, which his family clearly does. But who's supposed to hold him account for that?
Right.
That would normally be Congress. And I don't see Congress doing anything about that unless it changes, unless the Democrats take over the Senate or the House. But even then, you know, I don't even know if the Democrats would likely want to would try to impeach him on those grounds. Now, on the other stuff, on the Russia stuff, I think you find a smoking gun there, then yeah, because there's a lot of smoke out there right now.
Right.
Yeah. Someone asks, have you heard that Donald Trump owns stock in the company that makes the bombs that were used in Syria?
Raytheon, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I've read that too.
Okay. Well, listen, let's get to our news quiz here then. I think Colette is going to be our prize delivery person. Colette lives to hand out chocolate, so this is perfect for her. I'm going to read a question. If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. Don't just shout it out. I'll call on you. If you win, please then let other people win the rest of the prizes, because Colette likes giving chocolate out to different people, too. Okay. The first question. That question was also answered by Bob.
Bob. Two questions?
Bad
Come
Bob.
On. I didn't see the questions before.
Donna know. Brazil gave them
He doesn't get the chocolate she? Either. That's the sad thing. Okay, listen, here's one. A doctor who did not give up his seat on an overbooked flight was left bloodied and was dragged off of what airline? Sir, on the edge there, I saw your hand shoot up first.
United,
yes. On the other hand, maybe they were just trying to spare him the displeasure of flying United.
You see how angry the hands when they shot up? Yeah. They're like, United!
Yeah. I get a lot of questions about that. Did he pay for a ticket, or was he on standby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what bank is clawing back $75 million from former executives in the light blue there, ma'am?
Wells Fargo.
This is for... these are executives who were in charge when they had the fake accounts scandal. They were fined, I believe, $185 million for that. Who was actor Sean Penn talking about when he said someone was a bitter Hollywood wannabe? Your hand was up before I even finished the question, sir.
Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon, that's right.
I love that.
And that question was there.
was that Bob too?
Bob.
You were part of this one too, so don't worry. So the U.S. Postal Service is rolling out informed delivery, which will send you a daily what? What will it send you every day? Nobody? Do you want to take it? Yes?
I'll take a guess. A
text? No. No. In the red?
Yes,
they will send you a daily email showing you the scanned image of the front of letters you're about to receive by snail mail.
Oh, my God. Does that include...
Wait.
It's a free service, so they won't make money from it. Yeah. Apparently, the idea of it is, like, if you're a roommate, you don't always get your mail, so this lets you know what's coming, stuff like that, or if you're on vacation... Or you just like getting email and no one sends you anything, so the post office will send you. I don't know.
Sounds awful.
Sounds awful, Joseph.
Sounds terrible.
Okay. A new study shows that, just like in many workplaces, what do the male justices do to the female justices of the Supreme Court? Yes.
The mind reels.
No, though they might do that, but this is...
They make her answer the door.
That's not what the survey says.
Make the coffee?
No. Any last guess? Anyone? Way in back? Barbara, what do you think?
I would have.
You don't know?
I don't
You
know.
Don't know?
I have
take,
no idea.
You don't know?
Take notes.
I don't know.
Take notes.
They interrupt her. For example, Justice Sonia Sotomayor was interrupted 15 times by Justice Anthony Kennedy, 14 times by Samuel Alito, 12 times by John Roberts. Okay, well, let's move on to another
That's
one.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really
interesting. He never interrupts anybody.
Okay, so following the U.S. airstrike on Syria, British Foreign Minister Boris Johnson canceled his visit to what country? Where was he? Sir, in the back. Russia, that's right. He was going to go to Russia. He decided, I'll go somewhere where people are shouting at me less. So Mitt Romney is considering a return to politics. You don't even know what I'm going to ask. What's his new dog's name? See? I'm kidding. What position is he considering running for, sir?
Senator Utah.
Senator Utah, that's right. If Orrin Hatch decides not to run again, and Orrin Hatch is, what, 112?
Oh, 80, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good thing about Romney is he has houses in so many states. He can,
that's
you know,
right.
can pick
yeah, they're all
choose.
Home states
yeah, yeah,
they're
to all,
him.
Yeah.
Adidas, the shoemaker, they're going to begin mass producing shoes using what new method? Did anyone see this story? Anyone want to take it right along?
Yeah, 3D printing.
3D printing, yes, that's right. Who wore a $25,000 dress to her wedding at the Trump International Hotel in Washington this past week? Ma'am? Omarosa, that's right, Trump staffer. Okay, just two more. That one I answered during the program, so.
John.
I know, yeah. I'm terrible. Google denied allegations from the U.S. Labor Department that it had a major disparity in what? Someone who hasn't answered, ma'am?
Pay between men and women.
That's right, pay between men and women. Colette, is there another one in there after this?
There are two more.
Okay, let's do one more because I'm literally running out of questions.
I have a question for you. So.
Yeah. For them?
Yeah.
You've got it.
So at SFO, they're being criticized now for new technology that they're using that does what?
Does anyone know that one?
Scans license plates. Listen to KCBS tomorrow morning.
good plug, good plug.
And you will hear that beautiful voice giving the report, too.
Can we all just listen to Bob's voice all
That's
night?
Right.
It's the greatest voice.
Okay, so we have one more? Two more? Well, let's do one more. We'll save the other one. A new poll shows that 51% of Americans support what, despite questioning its actual effectiveness? Sir, the bombing of Syria. That is correct. Well, listen, we'll be back in just a couple weeks on a Wednesday night, on Wednesday, April 26th, right here in San Francisco. You can find our week-to-week news quiz every week on the Huffington Post. Thank you to our great panel today, Bob Butler, Joe Garofoli, Barbara Marshman. Thanks to all of you for coming out tonight. Happy Passover and happy soon-to-be Easter to everybody. And thanks to everyone who is listening to us online and watching us on TV. Have a great week, everybody.